give it, do it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown!
Unbelievable catch. Unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
Well, I'm Vic Carucci, I'm here. Nathan Zagura is not. He is off this week, but in his place in this show will be the voice of the Browns, and that is Jim Donovan with me, and we got some news to talk about, Jim. The Browns signing Paul McQuiston, offensive guard, are agreeing to terms for a deal with him. And this, not a surprise. He was in for a visit last week. Looked pretty promising that they were going to make a move with him, and they've done it. A key area of need addressed.
Absolutely. I was wondering when they were going to get to the offensive line, and when I saw McQuiston's name come up last week as an invitee to come in and visit with them, I thought that they might have something cooking. I remember when he was here before.
Yeah.
You know, he was here at one time before, and very, very impressed with what he's done since he left here, Vic. You know, he had some pretty good playing time in Seattle, and he did well there. And so I think this is a great fit for the Browns. Now, I'm sure it's good for McQuiston because he obviously wanted to get to free agency and get a new team or get a deal. But for the Browns, I think it's essential. I really do. And I think we touched on this when I talked to you last week. I was starting to get a little bit worried about cornerback, and I still am, but cornerback and offensive line, and the inside of that offensive line, the Max story being what it is. But those guards, are they going to be okay? Can they hold up?
I think it's hugely important that they got this addressed with experience, with a player who comes from the Super Bowl champions, but also comes from a team that ran the ball very well.
Yes.
Obviously, Marshawn Lynch gets a lot of credit for that, but that offensive line did its part to help open up those holes. And a lot of what Marshawn Lynch did, and he's kind of that power runner, happened inside. Paul McQuiston had something to do with that. So I think when you're looking at the Browns offensive line now and you see a talent and the experience that McQuiston adds, and then factor that in with the type of scheme that Kyle Shanahan's going to employ, you know, I think there's reason to be encouraged that this team, with signing Ben Tate, is going to have not just a running game, because it didn't even have that last year, but a significantly better running game.
You know, I was thinking about that, how just negligent that was last year, the Browns running game, once they traded away Trent Richardson, and how it wasn't a part of your game at all. I mean, the Browns were a passing team. Pass first, second, and third, and then punt. But I mean, you know, that's the way it was. I mean, the Browns had a negligent running game, and you know, Willis McGahee gave them everything he had, but he didn't have a lot left.
Right.
The kids that they, you know, it was a new back every week after that. Edwin Baker gave them a little jolt at a point in time, but nothing that said to you, hey, listen, we are going to run. I don't think any team came in here or played the Brown at the Browns at their home site and worried about the Browns running game.
Never.
I think that they were worried about, you know, and really that made you such a predictable team. So I think that the moves that have been made, not only that, Vic, but the going out and getting the tight end from Arizona, who is known as a very good blocking tight end. I know he didn't drop a pass, and that's good.
Jim Drake,
but he was also known as a good blocking tight end. And the other thing about McQuiston, you talk about Marshawn Lynch, but he also, you know, played with a quarterback that was young and that probably took a little bit longer to decipher where he was going in Russell Wilson, and at times took off and at times wandered a little bit in the pocket.
Right.
So all of that, you know, will help, I think.
Yeah, because there is a very good likelihood that at some point in the near future, this guy could be working with a rookie quarterback behind center.
Yeah.
And even if he's working with Brian Hoyer, the idea that he's had that versatility, that he's kind of worked with different kinds of quarterbacks, but especially a young guy, it says something for someone to have been a part of that line, to have that feel that linemen have to have for where their quarterback is, and especially when they're breaking a guy in. So Bob Candota, who covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times, will join us at 2 p.m. to talk more about Paul McQuiston and we'll get some background on him from his Seattle years. And as you mentioned, this was a guy who was briefly with this Cleveland Browns team.
I remember him,
Much like the Andrew Hawkins story where they were in the building and then gone and then they come back. Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer, joins us at 1:30. She is in Orlando, Florida. The owner's meeting's going on down there. We'll get the latest from her on what is happening there. Nathan Zagura will be on the show, but he's going to join us in a little bit, we think, by phone. He's vacationing down in Florida. I think it's raining a little bit down there on Nathan's parade, and I'm feeling bad for him and his family because they're trying to enjoy themselves. And we will get more into, though, what this signing of McQuiston means. It's a big deal to add this guy, free agent now number seven to join this football team.
Here's the other thing, too, Vic, is what I notice is when the Browns get somebody in here to visit, they're getting them. I mean, you know, they get these guys. I mean, you know, they, you know, it's, you know, all college recruiters would like to be able to land everybody that they have visit. But, I mean, you know, Ben Tate visited and they got him. The tight end Dre visited, they got him. Now this guy visited, they got him. Alex Carrington visited last week. He's an interesting player, isn't he, Alex Carrington?
He's a real interesting player.
He only played in three games last year.
Such a limited body of work. But, Jim, when he played well. He made an impact.
And when he didn't play, they did not play well.
Correct.
Yeah, he did not play against us.
Right.
Because
he was out on that by that Thursday night game. And Mike Pettine, again, knows the guy, knows not just the guy, but knows what he means to that defense. And I think, too, when you're a coach who had a vision for what your defense was going to look like, this guy was a big factor in how he was putting that together.
Right.
So when that picture changed, and obviously he had to improvise as a coach, but he's thinking, man, how much better would this defense have been if this guy stayed healthy? Now we have a chance maybe to get this guy here. So we'll see how that develops. But you're right. Both of those guys were in, McQuiston and Carrington were in this building on the same day last week, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with Carrington.
Well, I mean, you know, the Browns are obviously, they have the money, but they also have a message that people are buying because, you know, I mean, you can come in, the money sometimes is even across the board. It might be a little bit more in one place or another, but still you want to learn the environment and you want to hear the message of a coaching staff. And obviously the message is getting through to these guys. I mean, Ben Tate told me that on that Saturday when he finally came to an agreement with the Browns, that the message was clear to him that this was a talented team, but very young, and it was about ready to embark on the corner that has to be turned when a team starts to turn the corner and become a winning team. So the message is being heard by these guys. One other thing, Vic, that I applaud Brian Hoyer every time that a guy signs here. Brian Hoyer is one of the first guys to tweet out to them, congratulations and welcome. And there is a sense of leadership that I notice with Brian, that he takes it very serious and he's happy to get these guys here. The other thing is that he lives through another situation where another quarterback was being dangled out there in Matt Schaub and connected with the Browns and, of course, goes to the Raiders. But there's another one off the list that Brian keeps holding on to, that that hope that he's going to be the starting quarterback here.
And it's interesting that today, this morning, at the owners' meetings in Orlando, we'll get into this with Mary Kay Cabot when she joins us later in the show here, but Ray Farmer addressed reporters or addressed media from Cleveland down there covering the meetings, and Farmer said that he acknowledged that the team made a play to get Matt Schaub before the Raiders made the trade. Now, it would be interesting to see what the dynamics of that were. The Raiders got him for a sixth-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem like a lot. Why didn't the Browns maybe step up more aggressively if what it took to get a quarterback of that experience was a sixth? You were interested in him. You know you had something more to sell, I think, than the Raiders because you had Kyle Shanahan, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't follow through on that, so he ends up with the Raiders
and
now.
You got a great young receiver.
Josh Gordon.
I mean,
Hawkins.
Yeah, and you're starting to put the pieces together.
Yeah.
You know, you got an all-pro left tackle. You know, presumably you're going to have an all-pro center.
Right.
You know, so the pieces are starting to come into place for guys that are looking at the palette in front of them.
So I wonder how that leaves the team. Now, right after that, he said he was, quote, comfortable with Brian Hoyer heading into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't he be, right? I mean, I would think you'd have a comfort level with Hoyer. But the fact that you made a play for Schaub, what does that say to you?
It says to me that I think another quarterback is going to come here before we
A veteran, you're saying.
A veteran quarterback is going to come here. That I think that there is a comfort level with Brian, but you might be leaving yourself a little bit thin, you know, with options. If you just came in with Brian Hoyer and maybe two young quarterbacks, a guy you're going to draft and maybe another guy that you pick up, you know, I just think you might be leaving yourself a little young and a little thin. Remember, the body of work with Brian is, through no fault of Brian, is small. So, I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that I think maybe you might see another quarterback come here. But the Schaub thing was very interesting because the Browns and the Raiders were, you know, back and forth, and the only two teams that were really being bandied about is the possibilities for him to go to.
Yeah, those were the only two teams that were referenced. And, again, it would have been interesting. I mean, he was coming off a disaster
a
of a season
year,
in 2013.
Yeah.
So you wonder if that had something.
And a horrible playoff game the year before.
Yeah. So were we seeing Schaub taking that dip that sometimes happens where a player just people figure him out, or he's losing something in the way of skill or whatever it might be, or were we seeing a guy that was maybe a victim of some circumstance and maybe just wasn't entirely right physically,
right?
Whatever the reasons were, needed that change of scenery. I guess we're going to find out, but I would have liked the opportunity to see how he would have fit here. And in saying that, I'm not saying I would give up on Hoyer. In fact, I think there would – I just, for competitive reasons, let Brian compete, but see what the Schaub thing – how the Schaub thing would work just because of the whole Kyle Shanahan connection.
Well, here's the other thing, too, and on the competition level, I agree with you about that, because I think when Brian competed last year, he did very, very well. I have to tell you something. Coming out of training camp last year in the preseason – I'll say the preseason games, because I really didn't notice Brian a great deal during training camp because so much emphasis was put on Whedon getting him ready, and Jason Campbell, too, you know, getting him acclimated to the system. That Hoyer was off to the side. But when they got into the games, Brian played very, very well. And, of course, he played the entire fourth game against the Bears and left a very positive, you know, frame of mind with the people that were running the Cleveland Browns at the time, that if Whedon went down or was ineffective, Hoyer might be the guy before Campbell, and that's eventually what happened. So competition-wise, you know, I don't think Brian is afraid of it, and I think that he would do very well in it, in a competition. That's why I still think that somebody might be coming. And what do you think? Do you think somebody might be on the way?
Well, yeah, my answer is yes, because it does make sense to do that, but who that somebody is the problem or the conundrum. So the obvious names that are being tossed out there are Rex Grossman and you hear Mark Sanchez, because you've got connections with either Kyle Shanahan with Grossman, or you have a connection with Patton in Mark Sanchez. Neither option excites me at all, but to get that veteran guy here, because you need a veteran guy here, knowing that that there is a spot earmarked for a rookie to come in, and then you have Brian Hoyer coming in with a very limited body of work. All of that doesn't leave me with a great deal of comfort or confidence that the quarterback position is going to be in really good shape this year. I think the quarterback position is going to have at least as many question marks as it did last year. Now, the people who are so strongly against any notion of Brandon Whedon's time here being anything but a disaster would say, how could it get worse than it was last year?
How could it get worse, Victor?
I don't think it could get worse, but I'm not sure how much better it's going to get, Jim.
Yeah.
I mean, until I see it,
right.
Until I see it, who's proven that they can take this and take this somewhere? And let's use those three options here. Hoyer, Sanchez, Grossman. Are you feeling sustained success with any of those three right now?
No, Sanchez, no. Okay,
and it's not because I don't think they can do it, but what tells you they can do it?
Well, here's the thing. The Hoyer thing, and I hope I'm not being negative about this, but there is a little bit of a false sense of security there because he was so good in the two games. And remember, the third game was just a cup of coffee. I mean, he was only in there for a short amount of time. So, and yet, I think, you know what, Vic? I think people want that to be really good. That's a great story.
Yeah.
He's a Cleveland guy.
Yes.
He's playing everything perfectly.
Yes.
You know, as far as leader, good guy. You know, I want to work. I'm working my tail off to get this knee ready, and I want to be ready to go and lead
great
the team.
Great attitude.
I think the other thing, Vic, is I'm not comfortable with Sanchez. Grossman, I don't know. I guess I'm not thrilled by my reaction right here and the fact that I pause. I'm not that exuberant about that. I think the whole key is, don't you think, is when the young quarterback is picked.
Yeah, I think.
I mean,
that
if you took him four, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying you got to get him ready to play.
Well, that's, I mean,
pretty quickly.
What I of those three, and then the question marks that, and the other part that's left unsaid in raising the question of how good the quarterback situation is going to be is not knowing what the draft brings at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
I mean, whether that person is the four pick or whenever he's a pick, and I still have questions, as I'm sure you do and others do, as to just what this class might render. Is there one guy, you know, worthy of it? And if the guy is Blake Bortles, is there even any remote chance that he's available at four, given that right now he stands out as the best of what is out there if everybody puts all their data together? I know Nathan won't ever agree with this because he's Teddy Bridgewater no matter what, come hell or high water.
Even
off pro day, he's still very, very plussed with him, and that's fine. Because he's basing it the way you should base it, which is
body of
what
work.
He watched
tape.
Body of work. And what the tape tells him, and I support that. Now, as it applies to Blake Bortles, tape told me a lot of good things too, but it also tells me that just looking at many other factors, and not just that he did well at the combine, he did well at his pro day, physical size, all those things, I think he's probably going to be too good even for the Texans to pass up at number one.
Mm-hmm.
I think those dots stay connected there to their coach, et cetera, et cetera.
Then we're down to the other guys.
And Ray Farmer said this today, for whatever it's worth, he told the media, not going to Johnny Manziel's personalized pro day later this week on Thursday. Not going there at Texas A&M.
Okay. So, what do you read into that?
Well, he's consistent because it doesn't. Well, he went to Bortles. I guess he didn't go to Bridgewater's. Not going to read a lot into that because it all. The other thing that
didn't
he
go
addressed
to Cars, right?
Was that he's staying clear. Yeah, he's staying clear of not staying clear of these days, but he's staying clear of giving any hints or indication of what this team. He said they're in the of what this team's going to do in the draft. He's saying that they're in the best possible position because they got everybody guessing.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is I guess I'm going to side with Nathan on this. I'm not into these workout days, Vic, and how many passes they completed, 56 right. out of 68. I mean, because we've fallen, you know, in love with some of these things. Jimmy Clausen had the greatest workout day, and then he didn't, and then somebody else had a better workout day. And Sam Bradford, Mike Holmgren said Sam Bradford had the greatest workout day that he had ever seen, to the point where Mike Holmgren wanted to give up the entire draft to the Rams to try and get that pick and take Sam Bradford. He was going to do a Ricky Williams, Mike Ditka move down to New Orleans and give up the entire draft. These workout days, I am with Nathan on that. It's really the body of work.
I think you're there too, right? I'm totally there.
I mean, what do they solve? I mean,
even with Bortles' performance.
Should they have any incompletions in those days?
I was going to say, even with Bortles' showing, all it told me was he held up to the If being jittery or whatever, if overcoming the audience's presence is part of what you're gaining from this, then I'm going to give him high marks for that. But beyond that, no, it's what do you do in game situations? What do I see in you overall? There's other reasons I don't like Bridgewater as much as Bortles, but it had nothing to do with his pro day.
So
zero to do.
Real
with
quickly, if Ray Farmer had gone down to Johnny Manziel's thing, then everybody would have said, "Hey, the Browns are all over Johnny Manziel."
There's no question because
I get you. From
a media standpoint, these are clearly media creations of stories that come out of this. And the other troublesome thing, again, with Bridgewater is all this fascination over, oh, you didn't wear the glove. Okay. Well, you know, he didn't wear the glove. Like now we're, I mean, really? Is that like a major, because that sounds like an excuse. That sounds silly.
Right.
I don't care about the glove. Can he throw a football the way I want him to throw the football?
And can he do it with 75,000 people in the seats?
And somebody in his face.
And somebody in his face, yeah.
All right, we've got much more coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty 4. We want to hear from you. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. I am Vic Carucci. That is Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, right here on this Football Monday edition of CBD, ESPN 850 WKNR.